Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And it is 8:26. I'm Mike Dover with you. Joining me on the phone right now, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
I tell you what, sunshine up there. I think you're getting sunshine up there, aren't you?
It's a little gray sky, but I'm sure it'll get sunny by the later part of the morning. We've had a few warm days above average, officially. Spring finally seems to have sprung.
Yep, it has that, and maybe some rain coming with it too, so moving into monsoon. But let's get into this thing so we can clear all this up. Economic development is not really a strong suit here in New Mexico, and you wrote an op-ed about it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've talked at length about the situation with the tax bill and the legislature and the general approach to the economy. And, I really feel like having worked in New Mexico and discussed issues like the economy for the better part of 17 years, that I've gotten to understand that this is a mindset issue for a lot of New Mexico politicians. This state is developed a little differently from a lot of other places. I joke with people that New Mexico got its start in the 20th century when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor and unleashed the what became under Eisenhower known as the military industrial complex. And we really based our state on governments to a greater degree than other states, and I think it's warped a lot of our political leaders' thinking. And, I talk about these issues in the Las Cruces Sun and other papers in a opinion piece, and just how the mindset of too many of our politicians seems to be, how can we make sure that government gets its share of the pie? And they don't really think about, well, how do these policies impact the bottom line of families, of average New Mexicans, of businesses, and will they make us a more competitive state or not? It's in a lot of ways, unfortunately, I'm banging my head against the wall by trying to compare New Mexico against other states, because these politicians just don't care or see that that's what's in fact happening, is that we are competing against other states. They see oil and gas and the federal government as our get out of jail free cards, and don't have to make any tough decisions as a politician's card. And it's been a long road to kind of see what's going on. And doesn't mean we're not going to continue our work, but it's just the mindset, the approach that of a lot of people, and they get there because they're elected, unfortunately. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Paul, I look at things and it almost seems like New Mexico has gone backwards and stuff. Before I moved to our research, the state and stuff, at one time Alamogordo was the home of the Lee jeans plant. Here in Alamogordo, we had the cookie factory, but we had other manufacturing things around the state. You take other states like Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, all those other ones, their industry just isn't agriculture. It isn't just oil. It isn't just government, but it's a mix of agriculture, oil, manufacturing, different things like that. And here in New Mexico, it's like, okay, if you live up in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, you can work for the government, but the rest of you just have to struggle with the mom and pop shops that we're going to shut down from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the power rests, of course, with individual New Mexicans and people who want to see change and want to see private sector economic development and money flowing in here, making us a more prosperous state. That's really where things need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, the idea in the last legislative session and with the governor signing, that we somehow couldn't afford to reduce taxes, that we couldn't afford to reform our system. And at the same time, you're spending $1.2 billion in new spending, 14% budget increase. It's a farce. And in most states, quite frankly, the citizenry would be up in arms, marching in the street, adopting referendums and voting the bums out, so to speak. But in New Mexico, unfortunately, we're not anywhere near that state. And, if you listen at least or read the editorial page, the Albuquerque Journal, the only group that's really upset about the governor's veto pen isn't people who thought they might get a reduction of their taxes. It's the environmental groups who think they're upset about missing out on some of the subsidies and special interest handouts that they're used to getting. And this governor, quite frankly, and the legislature have been very willing to give them. So, the business community, as is so often the case, and understandably, is basically just happy to not have any more really bad policies pushed upon them. They every session seem to have a bill or two that would really drive a lot of businesses out of the state. And this last session, it was the paid leave, which would have been a real bear for them to deal with. And that passed the Senate and was heading through the House in the waning days of the session when it stumbled. So, I get where the business community comes from. They're just trying to keep their heads down and not hope that things don't get worse, even at a time of a massive budget surplus. So I think people who come here and people who are outsiders and they see what's happening, they might be shocked and amazed at the way New Mexico politicians deal with economic policy issues. But for a lot of folks who, once you come here, you kind of get this mindset adjustment that leads you to kind of accept that New Mexico is at the bottom of the barrel economically. And it's a tough mindset to break out of. So anyway, I know that's kind of a philosophical approach first thing in the morning, but, check out the opinion piece in the Sun News, Errors of Enchantment, and other papers across the state.
Well, and let's not forget that in this last legislative session, our governor told the legislature to be responsible and be fiscally responsible and spend more. Now, that's not fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, and there's terms that get used and thrown around in New Mexico that unless you live in New Mexico, you think it might mean the opposite. And that's just the way it is. And fiscal responsibility is one of those things. And New Mexico, it's often meant to be the idea that, we're going to have enough money for the government to spend next session or in 2 years or 5 years or whatever. That's one of the things that we've tried to just on the margins really address at the foundation with regard to the permanent funds. We look at those permanent funds, rightly so, I believe, as deferred spending. We're a state with serious needs. Now, the Democrats kind of started to use that approach when they were pushing their pre-K and early childhood. They said, we don't want to put this money away. We want to use it now because we have real needs. Of course, what those real needs are is a secondary question. The question is, what do we do with the money now as opposed to in 10 or 20 years? And I think that's actually a more correct question, but then you've got to get to what do you do with the money. And of course, the Democrats decided we want to spend it, as is generally their approach. They want to spend money right now. But saying we're going to stock money away for 5, 10, 20 years and then spend it on the next generation, that leaves most voters cold. People aren't really going to respond to that. And, you know, we saw in the last election that when people were confronted with the opportunity of embracing pre-K and early childhood, it passed overwhelmingly. And it wasn't a surprise, because it's hard to defeat something with nothing. Saying we're going to keep this money for some future when we don't have any oil and gas, which seems like that's probably not realistically going to happen in a very long time, because it's such a integral part of our economy, and not just New Mexico, but nationwide. So it's something that we try to adjust those mindsets. It's one of the big things the Rio Grande Foundation is all about.
Well, another thing that people squawk about is the a work requirement for welfare. Now, there are studies that have shown since the 1990s this program worked and was included in Speaker McCarthy's deficit reduction plan. Why not do it again? It worked.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see just how well it worked, again, at Heirs of Enchantment. To take a quick second and explain, Speaker McCarthy is dealing, as everybody is in Washington, with the debt limits and the need to pile more debt on top of what we've already got, the trillions of dollars, and allow the federal government to spend more. There's no realistic way at this point for the debt limit not to be raised. The question is, what happens as a result of raising that debt limit? And you know, we've had serious overspending in recent years in Washington, D.C. Some of that's been driven by COVID, but some of that's just the culture of Washington. What McCarthy came up with, among other things, is reinstating some kind of work requirement for food stamp and Medicaid recipients. And the last time that this welfare reform was kind of embraced was on a bipartisan basis during the late 90s. 96, I believe, was the year. And it was Bill Clinton, of course, in the White House, and a Republican House and Senate in Congress. And, it really helped reduce poverty. I have a chart from the Heritage Foundation, poverty rate of single mothers with children. And it started to decline, partially because the 1990s really saw a great economic decade for the United States. But it really accelerated those declines in poverty rates when we instituted a work requirement for those welfare programs, because we all know that putting people on welfare and just letting them continue to sit at home and collect checks is not a good model, not just for government, but for the individuals themselves. It's better if you have some incentive to get out and improve your life. And the obvious thing is that you build skills, you build that desire to work and become self-sustaining. If you're never kind of forced or encouraged to do that, it's very easy to fall into the pattern of just receiving those welfare checks. And so eventually, due to, I think 9/11 and then, of course, COVID and other crises, 2008 downturn, we kind of lost sight of the fact that we needed to keep these work requirements in place. And so we've backslid quite a bit, and it's time to do that, and it would benefit New Mexico more than most other states because of our low workforce participation rate. But the Democrats in Washington are not enthusiastic about this, especially our own representatives Stansbury, Legere Fernandez, and Vasquez. They're all just outraged, just mortified that we would ever impose a work requirement. Well, even Joe Biden, once upon a time in the U.S. Senate back in the 90s, was a supporter. And there's a video floating around on Twitter and social media showing him giving a big floor speech about supporting work requirements. But, you know, this is the world we live in now, where the Democratic Party has, you know, Bill Clinton, I don't know if he would be a Republican, but he certainly wouldn't have fit very well in with the Democratic Party of today.
I guarantee you John Kennedy would be a Republican today, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you touched on the measuring stick. It illustrates how New Mexico's gusher of revenues has continued and built up our deferred spending. We touched on that a little bit. Anything else on that one?
No. Well, yes. The Journal, Albuquerque Journal, had an article, and I do think it's important to note just how much money is coming into the state. And yeah, it is the oil and gas industry. Our permanent funds, and they look at all the permanent funds because now we have more, so many. But I mean, you're talking about a decade, more than doubling the value of our permanent funds. Back in 2014, the whole edifice of our permanent funds was worth $20 billion. Now it's $42.9 billion. And yeah, inflation's the real thing, but the fact is that this is oil and gas just flowing into the state. And so aside from all the spending that has happened in Santa Fe, we have put money away in a big way. And again, what will those dollars be used for in the not-too-distant future or in the more distant future? It's hard to say. I know what I would do with these resources immediately, and that would be to make New Mexico the most economically free and low-tax state in the Southwest, a bastion of freedom and liberty, and a place that you know, could really grow and become economically prosperous. But again, we're not in that mindset. So yeah, we'll leave it there. But this is from the Albuquerque Journal a few days ago.
Absolutely. And you touched a little bit on this with the governor's touts New Mexico's low unemployment numbers. What they really need to be talking about is the workforce, the non-workforce participation numbers, because, you know, we got more jobs than people willing to work, and this is all created by their handouts during the pandemic.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. The charts that I posted here show the change in private sector jobs from February 2020, of course, right before the pandemic, to March 2023. And again, yeah, the governor touts the low unemployment rate, but that is helped along, as you rightly say, by the workforce participation level being very low and remaining low, as well as the fact that New Mexico is not really a fast-growing state. So if your population is not growing, you may have a low unemployment rate just because you've got enough jobs for people, but that doesn't mean there's real growth happening. So the number of private sector jobs in states like Idaho, Utah, Florida, Montana, Texas, those are the fastest growing states. New Mexico is not at the very bottom, so we can be somewhat proud that we're not, you know, in the slowest growing states. Actually, the very slowest growing state is Hawaii, with Washington District of Columbia, which that's a whole different story and maybe a positive silver lining here. But New Mexico's on the positive side slightly, so we have more than recaptured our growth from February of 2020, but just barely. And we're a western state that is in the fastest growing region of the country, and all of our neighbors are again leaving us in the dust. But so it's not the worst news in the world. The other side of things, after February 2020, private sector jobs being regained back, how many months did it take the fastest states to regrow after, you know, regrow those jobs after the pandemic? Utah, Idaho, Montana, South Dakota, North Carolina, Florida also in the mix. New Mexico has regained those jobs, as I just said, but we were among the slower states to do it. Now, there's about a dozen or so states that have not regrown the amount of jobs that they had before the pandemic. West Virginia, Vermont, Rhode Island, North Dakota, New York, Minnesota, and a handful of others. So, it's mixed bag. But for the governor to really tout our state's low unemployment rate, I guess in the immortal words of Paul Harvey, all I can say is here's the rest of the story.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I love this next one because I would like for one of these environmental groups to explain to me how they can manufacture any part of an electric car without natural gas. Environmental group lawsuit seeks to end oil and gas extraction on federal lands.
Yeah, and this one would be something that at least it looks like the Biden administration, is having to fight on the side of sanity. That's just barely. But these environmental groups, and there's more than 360 of them, signed a petition in January of 2022 that calls for federal oil and gas production on federal lands to be zero by 2035. And because the Interior Department did not respond to this petition, I'm not sure what kind of petition it was, but apparently these groups led by the Wild Earth Guardians and others feel that this has some legal standing, that they should be able to sue the federal government for the abolition of oil and gas extraction on those federal lands. And, of course, this would impact New Mexico more than any state in the union. We have more oil and gas production on federal lands than any other state, and it's not really close. We looked at this because the Biden administration had threatened to abolish oil and gas extraction on federal lands when he came into office. That didn't happen, thankfully. Even Biden hasn't gone quite that far out of reality. But, it seems like a lawsuit that has no merit to it. Obviously, the U.S. Supreme Court is not likely to go along with this kind of crazy lawsuit, but it does show you where the environmental groups' heads are at. Their preferred approach is not the democratic process, so to speak, especially at the federal level. They're looking to leverage the courts and hope that they can get lucky with some liberal activist courts and make this decision stick at least for some time, or somehow intimidate the Biden administration, which would probably be very easy to do. But yeah, the Biden administration rightfully does have to balance those two interests, the oil and gas versus the environment. And they really, I don't think, have the legal capability to abolish oil and gas on federal lands if they wanted to. But it's an issue to watch, and you never know when something hits the courts where it might go.
Absolutely. That's going to be interesting to keep an eye on that one. Well, despite reports of being among the worst in the nation in terms of ozone pollution, since 1990, they've been saying in 10 years, the world's going to end in 2000, and 10 years, the world's going to end. It's 2023. We're still here. So yeah, let's talk about ozone.
Things actually are getting better. That's the real unknown or untalked about thing that people seem to want to ignore. And yeah, the American Lung Association came out with a report saying that Albuquerque and Eddy County are among the worst areas in the nation for ozone pollution. Ozone, and I'm a little fuzzy on the exact science, but this is basically what creates smog. Of course, anybody who's been alive more than 20 years probably has seen pictures of Los Angeles or been to Los Angeles when that city did suffer from really horrendous smog issues. And, I just make a reminder for folks that, ozone, as so many other types of pollution, has actually been on the decline in the United States for decades. And, you can, I'm sure, give some credit to the Clean Air Act and the policies that sprang up around that. I believe the Clean Air Act was passed in 1970, and mm-hmm. ozone was one of the things that the pollutants that it was meant to push back against and reduce. But, you know, I think we as average citizens also have a lot of power regardless of the government. And when we push corporations and businesses to be cleaner, whether it's the automobile manufacturers or oil and gas producers or who knows what manufacturing enterprises, they respond to those desires. And, you know, it's clear that ozone has been dropping. And we're not talking since 1970. We're talking just against the year 2000. Here in the city of Albuquerque, for example. Eddy County is a little harder to find specific data. It's a smaller community. You know, Albuquerque is a bigger metro area with, you know, often showing up on some of those national reports. I couldn't find any long-term credible information for Eddy County, which, of course, you know, it's in the southeastern part of the state. It's where oil and gas are booming right now. So, it's all relative, though. The good news is, not just in Albuquerque, but nationwide, ozone levels are dropping and have been dropping on a sustained basis since the 70s, but even since the year 2000, we've seen decline. So whether you're in the worst 25 or you're in a different grouping in regard to ozone pollution, you can pretty much rest assured that you're doing better than you were a decade or two decades or five decades ago.
No doubt about it. Anybody born after 1975 has probably never seen pollution, you know, air pollution, the dirty gray skies, never seen those because of the steps that were taken beforehand. I remember air pollution in Wichita, Kansas, because there's a lot of manufacturing up there. And I remember that, and that is all cleaned up. You can go to any place in the nation right now. I don't care if it's Los Angeles, New York, Bethlehem, where they manufactured steel. You go to those places, you get clear skies now. And so the ozone has been shrinking for decades now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It is something that has improved all over the nation, and that's despite significant population growth, mm-hmm. despite the number of vehicle miles traveled going up, despite a lot higher living standards. And, like I said, there's government, for sure. Government regulations can definitely help. Of course, you know, the thing that we always talk about is, where does the law of diminishing returns kick in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because something made sense when it was actually making people sick and they were dying, you know, doesn't mean that you have to keep going and going mm-hmm. and that you're going to have a net overall benefit there. And that's more of a political question at a certain point. But, whatever top 25 worst areas in the nation. New Mexico in general, we all know, has, generally speaking, blue skies, clean air. It's a place that is desirable to live. But a lot of those places you mentioned, you know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, another one that traditionally had some very, very filthy air. And what we have in this country doesn't compare, not just to, 100 years ago, but a much more recent past. So we can all be proud of that and feel good about the air we breathe. And started off with some pessimism there, Mike, but went to a little bit of optimism here at the end. And, I just try to look at the stories the way they come in and share the information the best way possible. But we'll see where the future takes us.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Paul, coming up this week, a week before, we had some other things going on. So we held John Block's interview with you until last week. And this week, number 499, the Balloon Festival information.
Yeah, I talked to the CEO of Rainbow Riders, which is one of the bigger ballooning companies, I would argue, in the entire country. They got their start in Albuquerque, where ballooning, you know, is really more associated than any other place in the country. Rainbow Riders now has a bigger operation in Phoenix than it does in Albuquerque. We talk a little bit about why Phoenix, you know, why that particular area has done so much growing and why it's a better, more attractive place to do business. We talk about the ballooning industry and the challenges they face. There's FAA issues. You know, there's labor issues. There's all kinds of things. The United soccer team wants a stadium, and they may put it at Balloon Fiesta Park, which is an issue kind of in terms of local land development. But, you know, no matter what part of New Mexico you're from, I think it's a fascinating conversation. And you mentioned the number 499. That means we are right there up against 500. In fact, I will be heading shortly to the studio to record the 500th episode of Tipping Point, New Mexico. So time has flown by, and it's hard to believe we've done 500 shows at this point of Tipping Point, New Mexico. But there you have it. That's where we are.
Well, Paul, 500 episodes, there should be cake.
Yeah, there should be. I haven't, but there should be.
All right. Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.